You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
In the Octagon, out in San Francisco, Matt, the armchair analyst, Doyle.
Do you like not care about your hygiene? Is that what we're hearing here?
I'm actually an obsessive hand washer.
Or maybe the best team in the MLS.
Wait a minute. No, Cashman, that's wrong.
Why?
Because, no, that's absolutely wrong.
That's why he's here.
Oh, from New York, you are listening to Extra Time Radio on SiriusXMFC, Channel 85 and MLSsoccer.com. Back in the saddle.
That's the voice everyone's been waiting
for. Yeah, I mean, you always crush it when I'm gone, though. I would hesitate to call you a super sub. I think we're just too deep.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's squad rotation, in and out, showing good stuff here. A big show for you today. Alan Gordon will join us in just a little bit. He will do so because it is the Cali Clásico this weekend on Saturday on Univision. Not UDN, not Unimas, Univision. San Jose hosting the LA Galaxy, a huge game. We'll talk to Gordo, get some stories, maybe figure out what Lenny's been up to, check on maybe a baby brash brother. I don't know. We'll see what he's up to. It's always a good time to talk to him. And, of course, we will run over the U.S.'s Copa America Centenario. Not quite exit because they have a third-place game on Saturday.
Oh, but God.
Yeah, but they're out. Argentina, of course, did the business. Number one-ranked team in the world, Argentina, did the business. A 4-0 win, and Lionel Messi, just a couple assists, maybe a beautiful free kick, a few things. We also have your thoughts on that in the mailbag. So we'll talk about that in the second segment. And then, of course, do what we do in the third. Let's talk about a little bit of midweek and run kind of over the weekend before we get to Gordo. Ronald Alborg heard us talking about a replacement for Vincent Noguera, and he stepped up with 5 goals in, what, 3 games over the last week?
Is his name Ronald or Roland?
Roland. He just
scored another goal as we were introducing him.
And then he stared up at the crowd and gave me the angry eye for tossing the in into his name.
Kyle Q tweeted at us. He said, apparently Roland Alborg had some thoughts on how the Union are going to cope in the post-Noguera era. There it is, Doyle. There it is.
There it is, but they also gave up 3 goals to the worst attack in the league. So I think that part of what made Noguera good was that he played on both sides of the ball and made the Union better on both sides of the ball. Alborg is good, man, but he's a pure attacking midfielder. He's like a Clint. Like, he doesn't play exactly the type of way that Clint Dempsey does, but kind of occupies the same spot of the field. So I still think there's a little more roster tweaking that Ernie Stewart and company need to do.
I agree, but hey, he strikes a pretty ball, man. He puts his
foot
through that. He's a quality player in that sense. You can watch Philadelphia and Vancouver go at it at 7 p.m. Eastern on Saturday, TSN and MLS Live. David Edgar, apparently he is training with Vancouver. They need goal scorers. I mean, that's like that note that you have there, Dave, that's on every single like time we preview anything with Vancouver. They need goal scorers. Like, let's go.
Exciting.
Step up. We'll see if they can do it on Saturday, 7 p.m. Eastern, TSN and MLS Live.
David Edgar's he's a defender, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know, but it's going for the both. I kind of just combined those two. I was
okay.
David Edgar's training, but yeah, they need goal scorers.
Let me ask you this, because the transfer window and trade window opens up in about 10 days. If you sign David Edgar, does that mean that you're willing to move Kendall Lawson? Because like, I bet you could get something pretty good back for Kendall Lawson in terms of goal scorers.
Can you?
I mean, in the league, can that trade happen? Or is it more that you would sell him maybe for some allocation?
How about this one? Kendall Lawson for Anatole Obong and something else.
I mean, he is Doyle, Cameron International. I mean, look, if I think you give him a chance.
You guys are brutal.
There aren't that many forwards out there.
No, I know. And not one's up for grabs. So.
And Kendall Lawson's a red card machine.
This year he is. I mean, he's.
No, he's a red card machine.
Okay, fine. Look, Vancouver fans, what do you want? It's coming. We're going to do a bunch with the trade deadline. We're going to do a bunch with the open window here coming up soon. I mean, I'll open that up to any team. What are you looking for? What do you think your general manager, your head coach, your technical director, your sporting director, whatever alphabet soup runs your club, what do you think they should go out and get? Because that's what the summer is going to be about here. Teams trying to take the next step or maybe jump into the middle or just make the playoffs. We'll see with some of those. Seattle and NYCFC. Seattle, we know they're looking for something, anything, especially in the attacking midfield. Doesn't look like Ladero is going to be the piece there. They'll have to look more. 5 p.m. Eastern on Saturday, they take on NYCFC, ESPN, and MLS Live. Is that Saturday or is that Sunday?
That is Saturday.
Oh, see, that's tricky.
Yeah. There are two national TV games on Saturday, one on Sunday.
That's true. Portland and Houston have the ESPN slot on Sunday, and it's at 6 p.m., so align yourself around these new rules with national TV games.
Today's Patrick Vieira's birthday, June 23rd, and Zinedine Zidane's birthday. Those are like my two favorite players of all time.
I sent them both a text, and they both said
thanks. They both thanked? Yeah, I'm just saying, if I have a kid, I'm going to do everything in my power to make sure it's born on June 23rd and becomes the greatest central midfielder of all time. If you fuse those two, you'd have the greatest central midfielder of all time.
Yeah, so watch out.
Watch out, world.
Yeah, watch out.
Watch out, world.
Watch out, world, about 9 months before June 23rd. Whatever Dave's doing, you don't want any part of that. So this game is an interesting one, though, because NYCFC, you know, we've complained about some of the results that they get, but, you know, if you look at some of the numbers, they kind of know what they want to do. They want to move the ball, and they do it. They're actually fairly successful in that sense. It is a pretty decent style of soccer. Iraola moved to the midfield, I noticed, in their most recent game, which I thought was interesting because they really haven't gotten much out of him. Doyle, both of these teams, I'm going to let you prognosticate down to the end of the season. Who's playing the best at the end? Who's the one getting it done at the end?
I think it's Seattle. I just think their pieces are better, frankly, and more cohesive. That back line for NYCFC is, I mean, every time they're going out, they are just running on the ragged edge of complete disaster. And look, they're going to score goals, and they're going to play some pretty soccer at times because I think Vieira is coaching them to do that, and they have some talent for that. But, I mean, you talk about a team that needs to rethink their approach to building a defense. NYCFC are exhibit 1A and 1B. Whereas Seattle, look, it hasn't happened for them this year, but I think we kind of knew it would be a rebuilding year in a little kind of way. But you can see that Morris is legit, and you can see that Kovar brings something, and they have the DP slot open, and they have some Tam, and Christian Roldan is progressing. So, there's a lot to build going forward with Seattle.
There you have it. Hit us up. I mean, NYCFC fans, look around the world. Look around MLS. Who do you want on your back line? Is your back line good enough? I mean, it looks like it might get you to the playoffs right now, but the step forward is what this franchise would definitely want. There is a good piece on the back line in D.C. That's Steve Birnbaum. He's still with the U.S. A little bit of a tough moment against Messi. Maybe that works in league play, like dragging that one across and letting it run. But
trial by fire.
But not with Lionel back there putting pressure on you. But people are saying Maccabi Tel Aviv and Haifa are both interested in him. Would that be a good move for Steve Birnbaum?
Probably not. I mean, Maccabi Tel Aviv is not in Champions League. So it's like you're going to go to a lesser league that's not really in Europe, that people aren't watching, to then play maybe in Europa League group stage.
Yep.
So it doesn't seem like an upgrade. My friend who's a Maccabi Haifa fan texted me and asked me if I've heard of this Steve Birnbaum. So I had to explain who Steve Birnbaum was, which wasn't that exciting to do.
Right.
But now that Aaron Schoenfeld's over there, everyone's super excited about all the Americans.
There's a lot of rumors going on. I don't think there's any chance of this happening, just national team. And also, like you said, I don't think he's going up a level if he makes this move. So I don't think that you'll see this one going down. I think there are some teams sniffing around him in Europe. No, nothing official that I've heard yet. There has been an official offer from one of these two clubs in Israel, and I don't think it's one that you'll see get taken. I think Steve will stay with D.C. They will take on New England without him. Remember, of course, because he's in that third-place game for the U.S. at 7 p.m. Eastern on Saturday. That one's on MLS Live as well.
No Bobby Boswell for that one either, which is pretty huge. He just got suspended by the disciplinary committee. So this is the type of game that kind of decides your playoff fate 4 months later. If you give up home points in this one, DC's in a tough spot.
Did we hear anything about Aurelien Collin in that disciplinary committee? Because I saw the red card he got against RSL in that 2-1 win for RSL. I don't think that was – I didn't see where the second yellow happened. Am I alone in that?
No.
I mean, I he's kind of battling over there, and then the tackle in the box.
I think we're all in agreement that it was odd, and then there was no PK given.
Right. So the question couldn't have been on the one in the box. Right.
I think it may have been for the Army kind of puts around Jura, or maybe just in the chaos of Sean Davis causing a foul and Plata rolling around. He just had the yellow card out
or
and figured I'd throw it at the two of them.
I don't know.
Right. Maybe that's what it was, a few fouls. I don't know. I would be surprised if it stood, though, because it didn't seem fair. Although RSL fans are pretty excited to see Aurelien Collin finally get a red card against their team.
Oh, yeah. Even the official Twitter account was getting into it. Hey, where was that in 2013? Man, it's 3 years later. 3 years later, boys. It's okay. It's okay. New York Red Bulls, they will take on Crew SC, though, at 7:30 p.m. on Saturday. That one's on MLS Live. Dili Duca He is with the Crew now, Crew SC. Good for him. He'd kind of been sitting out looking for the right situation. He found it, appears, with the Crew. We'll see how they use him going forward. Also at 7:30 on Saturday, Montreal and Sporting Kansas City. MLS Live for you. I'm going to ask you this, Doyle. Drogba, it hasn't really seemed like they've been better with him. Am I off there?
No, you're right. This year they have not been particularly good at all since Drogba's returned. And I think they just have one win in the past 10 games across all competitions, which is, I mean, that's a nosedive. I mean, that's bordering on death spiral. So, it's tough to tell just from the eye test, because they have times when they look really good, especially breaking out of the back. But other times, they just go so flat and so soft, you can get at them. And maybe it's just defensively from the front to the back, it's just not quite there, not quite working.
Montreal looking for a win. They need a win, hosting Sporting Kansas City. Also, Canadian team in action in Orlando. Toronto FC head down there. They had that 1-0 win in the opening leg of the Canadian Championship. Giovinco, who else gets the goal in that one? There's also a confirmation of some Sampdoria interest in Michael Bradley, which I don't put any credence in at all. I don't know why you would walk away from that contract and walk away from the club that you said you've been helping build and is starting to move forward, but... One other note here, I wasn't around for it, but Dave, you guys did a bang-up job on that special. Everybody go listen to it. It's on iTunes, easily accessible for you. Orlando, what they're going through now and how they're helping the community in the wake of that tragedy. Let's talk about Zendejas before we get to Gordo, and we're going to get there in just a second. We'll talk Cali Clásico, but I'm seeing Alejandro Zendejas maybe going to Chivas. Ivis is reporting it. It's kind of been in the wind here for a while that he might go down south, maybe $500,000 or so to FC Dallas. He's a really talented, young, attacking player, a lot of really incredible highlights. You look at a lot of talent, and coming out of Dallas, that gives it credence. But if he goes to Chivas, that probably means no U.S.? Am I off there? I mean,
they've had that stipulation before with U.S. players, but I don't think it's actually held. I think they're... That's just to placate the fans. And if the time comes where Zendejas is needed for the U.S., he'll still be free to play for the U.S. And look, this is a good bit of business for Dallas if it gets done. Zendejas is a talented player, but he's going to be behind Mauro Diaz on the depth chart for the next 5 years. If you can get money for him, and that makes it easier to form your own USL team, which everybody needs, especially FC Dallas, then you take the money and run. Add a sell-on clause, shake hands, good bit of business.
We talk about USL and the youth players all the time. Mm-hmm. We don't watch every team that close. It just feels like you get a name, everyone gets excited, and then they kind of move on, and the next name comes around. But they haven't really been breaking through and moving on. It's like they've been sold. There's a few of them around the league before we've really gotten the full thing. I mean, Villarreal got loaned down to Mexico, right. But it just... We're still waiting for like a bunch of guys to really break through, and Dallas has had guys, of course, Acosta and Ulloa, but in the attacking sense of the game, I guess, is kind of what I'm waiting for. And I know that they have...
Give time to a Coy Kraft.
Right, that's
instance.
The guy that they mentioned. Weston McKinney's a young player that they have that they're
they
really
They have two more
about.
Guys in their academy who are playmakers.
Right, and McKinney and Pomichol.
Jesus Ferreira right. and Pomichol.
Yeah, Paxton Pomichol, who they're really, really high on. So I get that. There's only so many spots in a team.
Right, and this is where the business, like Matt said, comes in. You have to know the timing of things, and you have a plan, and if he's not there and he wants to go and somebody wants to pay for him, and if his legacy in getting sold is that you now have a USL team, that's a pretty decent legacy for a guy like Zendejas. You can watch FC Dallas 8 p.m. on Saturday. They're going to take on RSL, who, of course, beat the New York Red Bulls this weekend. Let's get to Gordo. A big game on Saturday in San Jose. The Galaxy coming to town. Cali Clásico, Rivalry Week, Redux. On this one, you can watch it on Univision. So the big Univision. All right, let's bring him on now. Alan Gordon, I want to say former Bash Brother because I think that was a Quakes thing. Now with the LA Galaxy, of course, you can watch him perhaps in action. We'll see what Bruce puts out there this weekend. 10 p.m. Eastern, Univision and MLS Live. A big game. You can watch it. Alan, what's up, man?
Hey. Once a Bash Brother, always a Bash Brother. That's first and foremost.
First, that's you just hold on to that title. I mean, I didn't know if you aged out. This is you're going to be like 90.
It never dies. You don't know that? Goonies never die.
That's true. That's a good point. Usually, we introduce people with their Twitter handles. You don't have one. I'd love to know your theory on social media here. You're surrounded by it in the Galaxy locker room with DeBoy and others. But what keeps you off?
Oh, tell me about it. You know what? I'm more afraid of what I would say on Twitter, so I kind of just take that away from the picture completely. Yeah, you know, social media, it serves a good purpose, but, you know, I like to keep it to a minimum. And what I'm doing, Instagram, it kind of, I go in and out, you know. I'm kind of old school, I guess.
You're old school, but it seems like you got the best of both worlds. It seems like you don't have one, and yet you show up on everyone else's whenever you feel like it.
I never even knew unless you told me. I, as long as I don't have to read it or be involved, you know, I'm good with being on it.
There you go. We talked about Bash Brothers, and before we jump in on this rivalry, there's some news in Galaxy Land. Jack McBean is coming back up from Galaxy 2. We got the start last night. We're talking about Bash Brothers. Does he have any Bash Brother in him? Does Jack McBean, is he like little Bash, younger Bash? I mean, is there any sort
of... Yeah, you know, he submitted a resume. You know, I'm looking over it right now. You know, he's got a lot. You know, but it just doesn't happen overnight. You know, we got to get in there together and see what happens and see if we can make some magic. But definitely a lot of potential there. I love the kid. And, you know, would love to bash with them at some point.
Now, I don't think it's a coincidence, Alan, that your finger hit the button right when you said what he has a lot of. And I feel like that's like the secret ingredient for the Bash Brothers that you intentionally just kept from us.
he's got a lot. You know, Jack has a lot of Lenny in him, you know, to be honest. They both surf. Cool guys, relaxed guys, and you put them on the field, and they got a different persona, I guess. So, I mean, like I said, there's a lot of potential there. He's still young.
What's the scouting report? Get down and dirty for me. What makes this kid a good player? Because unless you've been watching Galaxy 2, and I know a lot of people have, it's been 3 years since we really saw that product in MLS. What do you see from him on a daily basis on the practice field? What's he good at?
Jack's willing to battle, you know, and I think, you know, if we're talking about being a potential Bash Brother, that's the key ingredient, you know, just being in it for 90 minutes, willing to stick your head in dangerous spots and scoring some goals, you know, and I've been watching Jack. He's really developed and improved since the last time most people saw him, and he's scoring a lot of goals, which is really good for, and I'm happy for him.
Nice to see a young player succeeding. Steven Linhart, you mentioned him. He could be a young one. We'll see. He's got to get some time on the field bashing before we're willing to say that. But I've been thinking about this for a long time now. How is Steven doing? We haven't seen him in MLS. He's not really been out in the spotlight, really. Can you give us an update on your forever brother, let's call it?
Yeah, you know, Lenny, he had some knee problems. You know, he couldn't shake him. You know, the career looks to be done. You know, he's retiring, and you know, he's pursuing other interests right now. He's on a quest, if you will. You know, a quest of life and its meanings. You know, Lenny is an interesting person. If you've ever talked to him, most people will tell you that, and he's searching for that whatever makes sense for him to continue on this life and his journey. I mean, I love speaking with him, and you know, he's looking for what's next, and so he's looking in faraway places. Is, you know, he was in Asia for 3 months, and he's back, and he's here, and he's there, and he's traveling, and he's kind of like a nomad. But Lenny is well, he's happy, and he's healthy.
That's all that's what we like to hear. It sounds like he maybe took a little hint from Landon Donovan and part of that, going over to Asia, trying to find himself, cool stuff and all that going. Give me your best Lenny memory on the field, because you guys had a lot of really incredible memories together, and I'm thinking back to the slam dunk and some other things and some goals that you scored maybe back-to-back in some instances. What's your favorite moment with him on the field?
You know, honestly, with Lenny, you know, we had a lot of exciting soccer moments and like game stoppage goals and stuff like that. But you know, the thing that sticks out to me was like his demeanor on the field. I mean, this guy was hated by so many players because of his aggressiveness and him just just his unrelenting Bash Brother mentality, if you will. But like, he would just look at me, and I would hear him say things to other players as well. It would just be totally off the cuff, you know. He would just say, you know, something about like the sun and the moon or something like that. And you're just like, what? You know, and then he would just like kind of continue to play, and he broke the ice, you know, on a serious moment most of the time.
One of the big moments for you guys as your partnership was the game-winning goal at Stanford Stadium. The Bash Brothers, your extra time winner. We've talked about extra time winners a little bit here in the office over the last day. There was, of course, the Ireland game, and today's the six-year anniversary of Landon Donovan's goal against Algeria. Some of them say it's like an out-of-body experience. Do you have any recollection of those like 5 minutes of your life?
Yeah. I mean, that's something I'll never forget. That was a cool moment. I think, you know, time doesn't really and time is kind of irrelevant, I guess, is my way of putting it. You know, I didn't know that was stoppage time. You know, I didn't know what minute it was in the game or how long it was taking. And when you look back at those things, you're kind of like, oh, that's crazy. You know, that happened so fast, so quickly together. You know, Chase Salinas scored the tying goal a couple minutes before, where it seemed, you know, like, you know, time really doesn't exist out there on the field. You're just kind of in the moment, and these things happen, and it's all kind of crazy, and it's just like, you know, it's a really, you know, awesome feeling that time really doesn't exist at those moments. You know, you don't know how long, you know, you guys are playing or if it's in stoppage time, how long stoppage time is. You're just trying to finally get that goal and push on and kind of push your body to the limit and see what could be possible and happen. And sometimes, you know, these magical things happen, which is really awesome.
Looking for some more of those moments this weekend in the Cali Classico. You can watch that one on Univision as well as MLS Live, of course, 10 p.m. Eastern. We're talking about a moment when you're on the field. Dave mentioned it. Landon Donovan, the six-year anniversary is today. And I've kind of seen a lot of people on Twitter where you will not have seen them reminiscing about where they were, what they were doing, what it was like to watch that goal. I was at Power and Light District. It went absolutely crazy. Alan, where were you? Where did you see that goal? How did you experience it?
You know, I think I'm pretty sure I was laying in my bed with my wife. I think she was pregnant at the time, or maybe we just had our first kid, and it was kind of a quiet experience, you know, to be honest. Nothing exciting, you know. I was just like, kind of like, hell yeah, that was awesome. Way to go, you know. Obviously, I love Landon and was proud of him in the U.S. And I was kind of doing silent fist pumps in the bed, but my wife didn't really even care what was going on. And, you know, that was my experience. You know, nothing exciting.
Got to make sure the baby doesn't wake up. Got to make sure the wife stays nice and comfortable. We saw Landon doing the on-camera stuff. He's doing all the color commentary on some of these Copa performance, some of these games. What'd you think of him in the booth? Is that where you thought he would be?
I don't, you know what? I don't know. Landon is so well-spoken. He has a lot of good, like, I mean, everything he says, I'm right on with Landon. He understands the game so well. He's very intelligent. You know, if I could give him some personality tips, he would be like the perfect commentator. You know, if you could just mix him and me together, like his ideas and my storytelling ability, I mean, it would be perfect. But, you know, Landon is Landon. He's going to do well at whatever he does. And I'm always good to see him. It's always good to see him.
Now put on your analyst hat, though. U.S. national team goes out against Argentina, 4-0 loss. There's a lot to talk about in this game. What are your thoughts, though, on the performance this tournament, on where the national team is right now and where it's going?
Oh, wow. That's a loaded question.
Not going to get you in trouble, though.
You know, honestly, I feel like the tournament, you know, it kind of played out as it should have played out, you know, which is unfortunate, because I think we lost the teams that, you know, on paper, probably we should have lost to, and we beat the teams we should have beat. So it was kind of, you know, just kind of cancel each other out. You know, we played well against teams that we should have beat, and we didn't play well against the top teams in the tournament. And, you know, I think that, you know, if you're being critical, you know, you want the U.S. to play better against the top opponents. You know, even if they lose, you want them to lose better. You know, it ended poorly against Argentina, and we had some guys out. I think a telling, something that's going to be very important is this next game against Colombia. I think if we can bounce back and have a really good result against them, then I think the tournament's a success. In a certain manner. But you know, if they come out and we get beaten by Colombia, then it's probably not a success.
There you go.
That's kind of my take.
Looking at that third place game, we were kind of on the same page, or we will be. We're going to talk about it in just a little bit here in the second segment. You can get our take on that side. Let's talk about the Galaxy, though. You guys sitting in fourth in the Western Conference, 5-3-7. Good on the home side, not as good right now on the road. I'm going to take it a little bit wider, though, and I'm looking at this team, and I'm looking at the Steven Gerrards of the world and the Nigel de Jongs, and you've got, of course, up top, Robbie Keane. We love him. Giovanni Dos Santos in this team. Who is the best player that you've played with on the Galaxy, Gordo? Who's the guy look at all these different players? We were talking about Landon and everybody else. Who's the guy that either you think is the best or maybe the one you enjoyed playing with most?
I don't want to bail out of the question. I really don't, because it's a good question. But I really, you know, even as old as I am, and I learn something from these guys all the time. I think Steven Gerrard's quality is, and his vision and his awareness on the field, and it is just really a different level. Beckham was the same. You know, you can criticize them for not having the engine that they used to have or whatever, but the quality is certainly still there, and I see it every day. And I learn, I literally have to change my game because it's so good and just a different level of the way they think on the field, you know, and you really have to change the way you think, because they can make passes that you're not used to. Robbie Keane is someone, his movement off the ball, you know, through the course of when I've been here is certainly a different class. Landon, I learned so very much from, but I think that Landon is somebody that I'm gonna really, when it's all said and done, I'm gonna really enjoy. You know, I think now that Landon's been gone, you know, I really respect the things he was able to do a lot more than when I was actually playing with him. I mean, we really miss him and his presence, and I think he was kind of the glue that made the Galaxy so successful.
So let's get it right to where it is now. Dave, you're showing me a stat here. It's been three straight for the Galaxy not scoring, Gordo. What's going on right now? What do you see from this team? How's been kind of the progression of the season? Because we know with Bruce, it's really not about the beginning and the middle. It's usually about the end, and he's building towards something. What are you guys building towards, and what's the state of things right now?
Yeah, I mean, we're missing some key pieces. You know, that's obvious. We've had some injuries as well. So this is a tough stretch for us. But, you know, as things sit, we're still in a good spot. I honestly think Bruce would rather not peak at this point. But once we get all our guys back together, you know, it's going to take, you know, we really haven't been together all year, which is another thing, you know. So we'll see how it plays out. We definitely have the talent. It's can we find the balance to be a championship team? Nobody's going to argue that we don't have the talent or the pieces to do it. It's just, you know, you know, is it possible for our stars to all come together and have a solid squad when it matters most? Last year we fell short. I think that this year we're going to be a little bit more determined to be successful in the postseason.
One guy we didn't talk about here, and that's because he's still with the U.S., and he won't be here for that game. He's got that third-place game to figure out, is Giassi Zardes. And I wrote something the other day, and we've talked about it on the show, just kind of saying to a lot of people out there that like to harp on something like first touch with the kid to back off, that you're not seeing all the amazing things he does. There's been some rumors out there as far as European interest for him. I don't think that surprises a ton of people with the amount of time and what he's done with the U.S. What do you think his ceiling is? Where is he at? How have you seen his progression over the course of his time with the Galaxy?
You know, this kid is he really is unbelievable. You know, nothing really seems to faze Jossie, which is one of his most important attributes, I think. You know, he, you know, good or bad, he comes back and he plays. I mean, this kid's developed a lot. You know, I think he's learning a lot with the national team. You know, and he has a bright future. I mean, I think he just signed a contract with LA, and I don't think that they're going to be in a hurry to get rid of him. So I don't see him going overseas, which is good. You know, it's good for the Galaxy. It's good for the league. He's a big star, and you know, we definitely need him. You know, and if he can come back and get in his natural spot, which I think is a forward, I think he's going to score a lot of goals and help us win another championship.
Somebody's got to get the goals this weekend, though. Saturday, 10 p.m. Eastern, Univision and MLS Live, San Jose and L.A. We'll let you go with this one, Gordo. We're going to San Jose, a lot of us here, for the All-Star game, and many people will descend on the city. You guys are headed there this weekend. What's the restaurant? What's the place? What's the must-go-to spot that we need to keep in mind when we're out there later in July?
I mean, I'm really not going to lie to you. I spent about 3 hours in San Jose. I lived in Santa Cruz, man. I mean,
hit us with the Santa Cruz.
Yeah, I was not even, I had nothing to do with San Jose. San Jose is really not a great spot, to be honest. I mean, I'm going to put it out there. If you want some good food in Santa Cruz, hit me up on Twitter. And I'll give you some recommendations.
There you have it. Alan Gordon just said it. Hit him up on Twitter for recommendations. You got to watch it. Yeah, well, you can't because it's on Twitter. Well done. Well done.
That was the point.
I missed that one. Yeah, I was going to suggest people go and tweet at you, but you played me. You got the end around, Alan. Thank you, man. We appreciate your time here on this Thursday. Good luck going forward, all right?
All right, guys. Always a pleasure.
Boy, I just got burned, didn't I? He put the carrot on the string in front of me and just walked me into a brick wall.
I'm going to hit him up on Twitter later and see what he thinks about that.
You should let me know.
Hit him up on Foursquare.
Hit him up on Foursquare. Well, maybe I'll just post on his MySpace.
Snapchat a little bit?
Yeah.
Just to say, hey, Alan, that was not cool, man. No good, no good. Watch him perhaps in action. We'll see. He's been in and out. He's had some injuries this year, but always a pleasure to talk to him. San Jose, L.A., 10 p.m. Eastern, Univision. The first time since 1999, guys. That's a pretty incredible number for you right there. That's it. Let's head into the second segment here. U.S. national team. What will Doyle have to say?
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
I hurt myself today to see if I still feel. I focus on the pain.
Back now on Extra Time Radio. The only Johnny Cash leading us in here. Dave's song you will get in the mailbag. We had to veto that one for you know, the rehashing of the U.S.'s loss in the CONCACAF.
I'm just trying to keep people off the ledge.
Yeah, you are. I know. I said CONCACAF there. It's because we're going to look ahead to CONCACAF World Cup qualifying because that's what's next for the U.S. Apart from this third place game on Saturday against Colombia. The reason they're there, which you know, which I'm sure you've run through your mind multiple times, is they lost in the Copa America Centenario semifinals to Argentina in Houston. 4-0 Argentina winners in this match, not really a result that anybody is necessarily surprised by. It's maybe the performance or lack thereof from the Americans that really has people jawing here in the days after. We won't spend too much time on the game. Look, you've already thought about that. You've probably read about it. You might have listened to it somewhere else. It's probably been rehashed. But Doyle, I'm gonna give you a quick crack at this, and then we'll add any thoughts before we move on to what's next for the U.S. Your thoughts, man. What happened here?
I mean, I don't think there was any lineup configuration that would have made the U.S. favorites in a game like this against an Argentina that's playing so well. Because they're the number one ranked team in the world by ELO ratings. They've been excellent for the last year and a half or so, and they're kind of a steamroller. Just because of that, though, it doesn't mean that U.S. fans should just throw up their hands and say, oh well, nothing we could have done, because the U.S. could have played better. Moving Michael Bradley further up the field and putting Kyle Beckerman in there and ditching the true demon setup and going with two, like a double pivot, caused just a complete disconnect between the central defense and central midfield. It made the guys have to think before they could play the passes that they wanted to play. And if you need to take a second to think against the likes of Argentina or Chile, you're dead. And this goes back to the gripe that I think everybody has had with Jurgen Klinsmann since day one. He doesn't settle upon a sensible lineup and give them time to gel in the friendlies so that when the tournament comes along, they're ready to go. I mean, what we saw was, in that sense, predictable. I think it needs to be understood, what we saw was also an outlier. Bob Bradley's team beat the number one team in the world, a Spain team that was better than this Argentina team in 2009. Bruce Arena, his team drew Italy at the World Cup when Italy was the best team in the world, and they beat Germany in the Confederations Cup. They beat, they beat Portugal, which was a top five team at the 2002 World Cup. Steve Sampson's team beat Argentina in the 1995 Copa America. We've never lost by more than two goals. We've never been non-competitive like this in a game like this. And that's really disappointing. And I'm not saying it all falls on Jurgen Klinsmann. The players, like, this is part of their legacy now, for better or for worse. They had to do better. But I maintain my stance that Klinsmann doesn't put them in spots where they can do better.
Three mandatory changes for the U.S. in this game because of suspension. You had Bobby Wood out, of course. And then in the midfield, Alejandro Bedoya and Jermaine Jones. Yedlin back in the lineup for this. But I'm with you, Doyle. I think, you know, that you had something going. Of course, the suspensions threw you off. But I also think Jurgen, who always talks about taking chances and putting it out there in the lead up to these big games, is always, we're going to go head to head. We're going to go toe to toe. And I think everybody looks around and says, well, maybe not the best idea. You know, let's be a little bit more pragmatic. But he had some opportunities to take some chances with that lineup, and he didn't do it. And I think that's maybe what some of the complaints are about. Wondolowski, love him as a player and love him in MLS, love him as a guy in this game, didn't have a role. I'm not sure what his role was going to be. And the one guy on your team that you knew could hold the ball in the midfield and was physically up to the level of Argentina and Darlington Nagby is not there. And I just wonder if he doesn't have faith in Nagby or he's just waiting and he wanted to go through this with the old guard. Either way, they could not possess the ball in the midfield, and most teams can't against Argentina. But it really devolved quickly. And a lot of that came down to that quick third goal. But it is the non-competitiveness that is troubling. And I just wish he would have maybe gone for it a little bit more, maybe matched his rhetoric ahead of the match and said, you know what, let's take some chances with these guys out. We have a great opportunity here, and I love Graham Zusi, and I actually thought he played pretty well, and Kyle Beckerman's been a guy for this team for a long time, and I just didn't think this was the right game for him, and he didn't take those chances, and the U.S., I think, paid for that. But you're right, the players did not bring it on their end either. I think Michael Bradley had one of his worst games for the U.S. Nobody really involved, Dave. It was a hard game to watch. That's what I got from a lot of people texting me during the game, other fans, my family. which is hard.
Yeah, no, it was, you could also say from the U.S. point of view, boring because they didn't do anything and there was no cohesive unit.
No shot. We haven't mentioned that yet. No, it's the first one shot.
Paul Carr tweeted out, it's the first time since 1998. And he doesn't have stats before then for the U.S. national team to end a game with zero shots. And that's what it was for them. It's no cohesive unit. The Bob Bradley teams, they played a certain style. That style worked against a team that was better than them because they knew how to play as a unit. They knew how to counterattack. This team has no style, and so therefore when they go up against a team that's better than them, when they go up against teams that are worse than them, at times they're plotting. Costa Rica, it worked very well, but it's not smooth. Guys don't know exactly where the other guy's going to be. Guys don't know exactly what they want to do before they get the ball a lot with this team. And like Doyle said, against a team like Argentina, you don't have time to make mistakes like that. You don't have time to pick your head up and make the decision a lot because guys are closing on you. They have two or three of the best holding midfielders in the world. They clearly have the best attacking front line on the planet right now. And you don't have opportunities to figure it out once you're out there. And this team for, I don't know, what, 5 years now, they haven't had an identity. Even in this tournament, they played well. They absolutely played well, but tell me what they were against Ecuador, Paraguay.
Did they play well or did they get good results?
Well, so here's the thing with this game, right? This game, Argentina, they lost a bad result and there was no performance. Right. There was no guts. There was no effort. There was that in the other two games. Now, I'm not saying that there was high skill or tactical awareness, but there was an effort. There was a drive to the team. And I think Mexico fans right now are saying in the Chile loss, there was no guts. There was no effort. And I think it's similar to what we saw in the Argentina game. So I will say, Doyle, in that way, I thought they showed well for themselves in that they played well. They played hard, at least.
Now, the other thing I think that you see, and I talk to people who are on the side of the field, is honestly, Argentina just physically are better, as athletes are better. I thought the four guys that really could match up with them were Cameron Brooks, Yedlin, and then Zardes. And there was a deficit there that I think you could feel on the field. And a lot of that, we talked about that rest beforehand. Well, the same guys played for like 20 days straight, just over and over and over. And I just thought the U.S. couldn't keep up with Argentina. So no matter how much guts, how much you know, stamina they had, wasn't going to matter. That one-touch passing was so crisp. They needed a little bit more behind that, maybe a little bit more of a plan to go into. And we never found out what that plan was. Nobody really could articulate that in the post game. When you're saying, okay, 3 minutes in, the goal comes, yeah, that screws your game plan. But what was the game plan? What were you trying to do?
Well, it wasn't clear. And I'll tell you the combination of factors that made me realize that this team wasn't prepared was we actually started playing a high line after that goal. But at the same time, we weren't getting pressure to the ball in midfield. And if you're going to play a high line, you have to pressure the ball in midfield. You can't let guys, like, forget Messi, forget genius playmakers like that. You can't even let guys like Benega and Mascherano pick their head up and pick out their passes.
Both those guys were brilliant, by the way. Mascherano, yeah, he absolutely puppeteered this whole match.
Yeah, he tore the U.S. up, and the U.S. never got pressure to him. And this is where, I mean, look, we've all heard it from enough players. Jurgen doesn't believe in tactics. He believes in individual effort. And he's got a team of little John Galtz out there, and you know, go be your best self. And I don't think that works at this level. In the past, the U.S. has gotten results pretty consistently against FIFA teams ranked in the ELO top 20 because we've been more compact and we've been able to understand where the pressure points are holistically. This group does not do that under Jurgen. And look, in his entire tenure against ELO top 20 teams, we have one win and one draw and 8 losses. That is in official competition, not friendlies. That's regression. That is pure regression. He has the worst record against good teams since Bob Gansler.
Well, you know, we've kind of been down here. Let's take a little bit of a step back. That game is gone. It's been digested. There's another big game, and I think it's an important one for the U.S.
Can I just say one quick thing?
Yeah, go ahead.
From now on, if Chris Wondolowski's on the starting roster, I'm not watching the game. So just so you can know. Okay. Don't have me come in here and talk about a game. If Wando started, you know I didn't watch.
Okay. All right. We will remember that. I'll keep that in the back of my mind. Saturday, third place game, Colombia, 8 p.m., FX, Univision, and UDN. I don't know how much Colombia will put into this game. I don't know how much the U.S. will. I don't know if they'll shuttle people around or they'll get guys in who haven't played.
Which actually could be fun to watch.
It could be. It could be. I think it is important for the U.S. to end this on a high note. I think it's important to see some sort of fight back against the top team, which Colombia is. Some sort of even little bit of progress. I definitely, if it's going to be the third place game against Panama from the Gold Cup last year that I was at, please let's not have a repeat of that one. Let's look ahead, though. September, those are the World Cup qualifiers. They're coming up here in round four. It looks like the U.S. is pretty safe. Guatemala at 6 points is in third in Group C. Trinidad and Tobago on 10, U.S. on 7, everybody with 4 played. The U.S. will head to St. Vincent and the Grenadines for a game that everyone would assume that they will win, that they need to win. That would take them to 10. And then they'll be home in Jacksonville against Trinidad and Tobago. Where do you go from here, Dave? What would you like to see? What sort of lineups, experimentation, any call-ups? Do you stick with what you've got? Because I know we were down there in that segment because the Argentina game was down, but I do think there were some positives, some really, really important positives from this tournament, both from a player and a relationships level on the field as well as just the fans.
Yeah.
Now what?
I think he's going to stick with a similar lineup. I think the key is finding a way to get Fabian Johnson in the midfield and finding a replacement for Jermaine Jones, because I don't think Jones will make it to Russia. Clint Dempsey might not either. I think there are players that can play that role, though. I think you have a little more flexibility with the forward position than in midfield. If you're going to turn Michael Bradley into the player you want him to be, you need to have something solidified next to him. So you have to figure out that role. Jermaine Jones was great in this tournament. He's been great for 3 years. I don't know that he makes it to Russia, and I think you have to find a way to fill that spot. And then, you know, the young guys have to get opportunities. Pulisic has to get opportunities. Jordan Morris has to get an opportunity at forward. Nagby has to get an opportunity. But Pulisic, he actually moved into that Dempsey role late in the Argentina game. So maybe he sees him as a future there. It seemed like sitting under the striker. I don't know. But those are the three simple names you're going to hear over and over again. I think Miazga is another one. But center back seems to be pretty locked down for now.
Yeah, I mean... Look, it starts with the third place game. There is no reason not to start Pulisic and Nagby, whether the lineup is something of a 4-1-3-2 or a 4-3-3. Jurgen gets to play with that to his heart's content. But I think I basically agree with you. I think we have to start maybe moving on from the Beckerman, Wando, Jones, probably not Dempsey yet era. And finding the right replacements. And I think he has a couple of them on this team. But at the same time, it has to be done in a different way than what we've seen in the past from Jurgen. Playing Perry Kitchen at right midfield doesn't teach us anything. If we're going to see Perry Kitchen and get an idea of what he can do for the national team, I want him to see him playing defensive midfield, but I want to see Brooks and Cameron behind him at center back. I want to see Bedoya in the same midfield with him so he has a veteran to learn from. This is a level of stability, and it's like a science experiment. You need a control group, and the control group are the veterans who have a baseline of performance that you know you can rely on. So, you know, folks are crushing Michael Bradley right now. If you think Perry Kitchen is better than Michael Bradley, let's put him in there, but put him in there in a situation where he could succeed and actually show if that's the case.
One question that I have, and I forgot to say, is I don't know a performance where Alejandro Bedoya has had a great game for the U.S. national team. And I don't know if that's the way he fits into this team. I don't know if that's his style compared to the other guy's style. I don't know if it's positional. I don't watch that much French league. I will be the first to admit that. So I don't know his best skill sets right now and how they fit in the national team, but he seems like a permanent fixture because he plays consistently. First team, top level football in Europe. I don't know why I just said football. That makes me really mad at myself. So I think that's another question mark in this lineup, because when you look at the pieces, if you think Nagby's going to come into this roster, if you think Zardes is a winger and Wood's going to start up top, there are only so many places you can go to.
This is where I was actually going to go next, is where does Nagby play? And it's not because I think Bedoya should be out of the lineup. I think part of that is his charm, is that he is a good player basically every time you put him on the field. He's not making mistakes. He's always covering for his guy out there. And especially in a tournament like this, you have to have him against that top-level competition. I think he's an important player. But I do wonder where Nagby fits in. And Doyle, I'm going to throw that one at you. Where do you stick him in this lineup? If we're out here talking about we need to see Darlington Nagby, and that was kind of the exasperated chant from MLS fans and folks that are familiar with his talents throughout the tournament, well, where do you put him?
I think there are two probably pretty decent options, and the first is you put him in central midfield in front of a pure defensive midfielder, whether that's Bradley or Kitchen or Beckerman. I mean, I would prefer Bradley, but that's fine. He is a two-way player. There, you know, this is not Lee Wynn, who wants to hang around in the final third to, you know, the exclusion of almost anything else. Nagby will actually do the tracking and do a little bit of the defensive work. So let's see him do that. You know, let's give him the role that Germain had and see if he could be the successor. Obviously a different type of player, but in the same spot. The other one is you put Germain back in there with Michael, and then you put Nagby on the left side of midfield, have him inverted. Look, if the U.S. is going to play a version of the 4-4-2, we need to have one winger who's not a Zuzi or a Zardes. Those guys are purely north-south players. They don't add much in possession. The modern 4-4-2, the way Leicester plays it or the way Atletico Madrid plays it, you have one of the wingers or maybe even a second forward drop back and become at times an ad hoc third central midfielder so the central midfield doesn't get swamped. Nagby's done that before, a little bit, for the Timbers, and he did it against Trinidad and Tobago way back last autumn in his first cap when he came on for the final 20 minutes and completely tilted the field. So I'm happy with either of those. As you can tell from my tone of voice, I am angry we didn't get to see more of it in this tournament already.
One nice thing, I thought Landon Donovan was quite good as an analyst, and it's the six-year anniversary of his goal against Algeria.
It is.
So remember the good times, my friends.
Yeah, and there were good times in this tournament, too. Let's not get too absorbed in this Argentina side, finding a center-back pairing, some other developments. There were good things, and it was fun. Look, a big part of fandom.
Zardes becoming the lightning rod for the future of U.S. soccer.
I mean, he's basically a veteran now. Like, yeah. Props to him. I actually still am. I still think he belonged on that field and had a not too bad game for being asked to play wing back basically for 90 minutes in this one. Now, one quick thing before we get out of here, and I promise we will get out of here on this U.S. stuff and get back to the mailbag. You guys, it's like you have some complaints, something to get off your chest that we'll have to get into here. Jurgen Klinsmann, there were some rumors linking him, I think today, late yesterday, to Southampton. It's already been debunked. NBC Sports coming in here with their sources. My boy Joe Prince Wright, I'm sure he's like, he's in the basement at that club. That's his. I think he played there in the youth.
There's teams. A statue of him outside.
Yes,
right?
Something like that. Something. We love you, Joe. Anyway, can we just say that never will I believe that Jurgen will leave the U.S. until he's forced out of here because it's just too good of a gig. Like the money
he makes $3.2 million.
The money
dollars
and
a
then
year.
The opportunity to go coach in another World Cup.
Although if you go to Europe, I think Laurent Blanc just got fired and they gave him €22 million.
Really?
That's what the rumor is. So it could be a pretty good gig over there.
Jeez, I wonder what they'd give me if I got fired. Yeah. Not €22 million. No chance. That's getting it for us. Your thoughts, as always, we want them at Extra Time Radio on Twitter, Extra Time at MLSsoccer.com via email. Let's get out of here. We'll be back with the mailbag.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime@mlssoccer.com or tweet at Extra Time Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
This is how we do it.
Back now on Extra Time Radio. For some reason, I just didn't think that was a good one to lead us into the U.S. national team segment. But hey, we do have some complaints in the mailbag about our music music selections. Is that an indication? Do we trust those? What do you think, Doyle? You're part of this. Do you think that we're bad on the music side?
I blame you two. I think you guys have the bad selections. And
wait, we're bad on the music selections?
Yeah,
Are you kidding?
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing in our mailbag. That's what we get. They even threw out Sound of Soccer as something to compare us to. We'll get to that in the mail. Start us off here, Dave. What do we got?
I just want everyone to know that I was...
Wait. What is Sound of Soccer?
It is Nick Furshaw's podcast with the Seattle Sounders. Yeah, you can't speak his name. Persona non grata.
I was just going to say, I was going to start Seg 2 with a little bit of this.
There are things on here for the USA. Can they do it here? Cross, and Dempsey is denied again, and Donovan has scored! Oh, can
Chills.
You believe
yeah.
this?
But go, that would have been a good choice USA! As well. We still got it in.
Yeah, we did.
Getting it all done.
So let's move on to the mailbag, though.
You cut us off so quickly.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, man.
To the things that matter.
Yep.
And by matter, I mean what color jersey you're wearing at a game. You guys talked about wearing club jerseys to an international match, and if I remember, you were all against it. I don't see it as much of an issue. Honestly, jerseys are expensive, especially if the player you're seeing with the national team, you have their club jersey. What is not acceptable and what I'm finding very confusing is during the RSL highlights from the Portland game, which was last weekend, after Jura's penalty goal, you'll find a man wearing a Seattle Sounders jersey. As an RSL fan, I know that these three clubs all have a quarrel with each other. Not like Seattle and Portland, but what is it like trolling? What are your thoughts?
I don't know if that's trolling. It's probably trolling. It's almost certainly trolling. Or if it's just like, this is what I have, so I'm going to wear it. Maybe that fan wasn't aware of some of that beef, or maybe they were and they went right for the troll. You're really disagreeing. I think that's like the New York City mindset there is like always a troll, for sure a troll.
You don't wear Doyle, you're not wearing a Seattle Sounders jersey to a Portland RSL game, and you don't know that there's a rivalry.
If I'm a Sounders fan who is displaced for some reason to Portland or Salt Lake City, I'm absolutely wearing my gear to any local soccer match that's not national team related. Absolutely. You have to show your colors. That's the whole point.
Now, I'm going to continue this line of questioning. Can you wear a Barcelona jersey to an RSL Portland game?
I mean, that's fine.
You're okay with that?
Yeah, I think it's fine too. Like, you're a fan of soccer. You like Barca. Maybe that's just what's in your closet and you really like the shirt. You think it's super cool, so you wear it. I don't have a problem with that. I think that's fine too.
So, Doyle, your only issue is taking a national team experience and making it divisive by wearing club jerseys that could be rivals.
See, and I'm on the side of, like, I don't care. Like, all good, man. Wear what you want. It's cool. Like, I probably have said in the past on the show, because we've discussed this, like, 5 million times, I've probably been on the other side. But today, for whatever reason...
Oh, now you're okay with
it. Yep, I'm okay with it.
Well, let's talk about the U.S. national team then, because the jerseys are in the crowd are clearly what happened against Argentina. Matthew Feldman says this was the worst performance by a U.S. team. What was worse, though? Their performance against Argentina or Mexico losing to Chile? He has this. USA had 0 shots, 32% possession. Mexico had 9 shots and 42% possession.
I think Mexico's is by far worse. And I know the U.S. didn't look like they could really do much of anything against Argentina, but it's the number one team in the world. It's Messi. They do this to teams. I just think that Mexico looking like they just straight up gave up is the much worse look. Like, the U.S. may not have played well, but I don't think they gave up. It's not like they weren't trying. They just didn't. It's like trying to chop a tree down with like a baseball bat. Like, it just doesn't happen. You might throw yourself against it. It's just not gonna, Mexico just... They laid over. They just said, nah, we don't care, and walked away. So,
yeah, I'm with you there, because the U.S. were clearly demoralized after the third goal. Mexico quit.
Well, we have a fix here from Joe Pozzolano in Matatuck, New York, and he says, the best player on the national team is Michael Bradley. Then the next step for the program is simple. All U.S. soccer needs to do is develop 23 better players. How's that, Doyle?
I mean, that's heat.
No, I mean, that's fine. You know, I think that there's arguments for Fabian Johnson and John Brooks and Jeff Cameron and Clint Dempsey and Jermaine Jones, and the list goes on and on. Obviously, there's a talent gap with Argentina, and you know, I think with probably the top dozen or maybe the top 15 teams in the world. But look, we've had less talent than this before and showed better. I still think that it's more about organization and approach than it is about raw talent.
Doyle,
period.
I think the gig is up, by the way. In the middle of that, a truck rolled over the sewer that you're recording this show from. everyone knows where you are.
Is it like riding a motorcycle while you do this show?
I believe that I'm underneath the flight pattern today for Oakland International Airport.
Oh.
So that was coming in from parts unknown.
Sure. That's all we got today. Big thanks to Alan Gordon. Big thanks to you guys and all the sewer people that listened along with Doyle, wherever he is. Yeah, wherever he is. Underneath the flight pattern. We'll be back on Monday. Enjoy your weekend.
You're listening to Extra Time Radio.